Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and changemakers. As a self-professed word slinger for capitalism, Sarah Rosinski brings words and stories to life through her company, Shiny Red Copy. She's also the author of Unflubify Your Writing, Bite-Sized Lessons to Improve Your Spelling, Punctuation, and Grammar. In this delightful conversation, she shares her love for words and the stories behind every single word. We talk about the origin story of her business, the power of mentorship, the ethereal nature of copy, and the beauty of limitations, not to mention her curiosity for typefaces and etymology. Sarah has a lot to teach you throughout this conversation if you want to have more fun with your writing. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/561. Well, Sarah, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Well, I start with this question with everyone. What are you endlessly curious about?
There are many things, but I would have to say the most curious about would have to be words, because I am interested in all aspects of them. I love etymology. I love slang. I love the way the English language, some say borrows and some say steals words from other languages. I am really, in the last few years, I've gotten really into like printing and typography and font design, which I have no capability or interest in doing myself, but I'm so interested in it that I go to type meetups where I see how people design letter forms. I could fill this hour just sort of talking about how interested I am in all that stuff, but that is the answer to your question.
That's spectacular. And the first thing that comes to mind is there a word that encapsulates your love for words?
Oh, yes, it is logophilia. It's just love of words.
That's cool.
And it looks like it's logophilia, but I think I am pronouncing it right with a short O. And I'm sure that there's some Greek scholar, you know, screaming. But anyway, and actually, not to digress too much, but I have these very cool business cards where there are 12 different varieties, and each one has a vocabulary word that I find tasty on it. And I'm pretty sure one of them is logophile.
That's cool. Oh, that's brilliant. What a great way to market yourself.
I knew that Moo would let you do that. And This is not a paid promotion, but feel free to pay Chris Moo. Anyway, and I thought, I got to use that somehow. And so I have lots of fun words.
Yeah. Well, one of the words that called out to me when I was reading your bio was the word racquetball.
Oh,
seriously, because I love racquetball too. And it's one of those sports that you don't hear a lot of people talk about.
You are correct. And actually, someone just has said that to me within the past week, that very same thing. Like, I didn't know people played racquetball anymore. For those of us who do, it's
exactly.
Alive and well. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's just the universal sign that the game is going to have a resurgence.
I hope so.
Maybe we'll see documentaries about it.
Right. I do always worry about it because it takes up valuable real estate in gyms, and you always hope they're not going to replace it with a, you know, cycling space or something. So.
Right. Well, and what's so interesting too about racquetball is like, how does racquetball connect to work? And I think there's something delightful about crushing that tiny blue ball as hard as you can on the wall. So like, how do you channel your writer's angst into that crushing impact?
Well, you might be revealing more about yourself than about me. I neither hit the ball very hard, nor do I have angst about writing. I just love the challenge of the game. I find it entirely engaging. I have no interest in doing calisthenics, you know, anything boring. But if you're playing racquetball, you will get such a good workout because you're playing, and typically it's with someone you really like, and so it's it's really like a play date.
See, I should have played racquetball with you instead of the people I did, because yes, that was revealing of me, because I played when I was in my 20s, and like I was a maniac on the court.
Oh wow, yeah, so. I'm not. Actually, the other day, I may have been responsible for the ball breaking, which I have never. Well, I have played for an incredibly long time, and that has never happened, which is proof I don't hit the ball that hard. But I think it was after my hit that I noticed a slight, you know, hole in the seam. So yes. I felt, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm not like you. I'm not aggressive.
Oh, I'm not anymore either. I would scare myself if I traveled back in time. Seriously. Well, you mentioned that you don't have writer's angst, and I think that's amazing. So tell me more about this love for writing that you have.
Jeez. Okay, so I won't lie. I do relate to the saying that many different writers have said in different ways. You know, I think it's attributed to Dorothy Parker sometimes, but it's something like, I enjoy having written, meaning like it's very gratifying once you've completed something. It is hard while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of equal parts difficult and gratifying. It is hard to even identify the painful parts and the pleasurable parts. They're really interwoven. You're solving a series of puzzles, which is engaging and fun, kind of in the same way, you know, racquetball is, you know, where can I hit this ball, you know, that will move my opponent out of the center of the court. You know, it's the same, it's strategy. But there's, for me, there's always, there is sort of an underlying fear that I won't be able to do it, which is preposterous because I've been doing it for an incredibly long time, and I've never been unable to complete an assignment. So anyway, yeah, my angst is irrational and conquerable, but kind of always there.
Right.
Yeah, but what was your question? Actually, I'm sorry. You asked about angst, but you please repose your question so that I can make sure I answer it.
No, you're doing great, because what the question really was getting at was not the angst, but the love for writing.
Yeah, the love is, this will sound terrible, but I'm good at it. I'm good at writing, and I enjoy succeeding at something. Like, it makes me happy when I know I've crafted a fun turn of phrase, or it just pleases me. So I'm, you know, is that egocentric? Is that a show off? Is that, you know, sure, it's all of those things, but that's the truth. You know, I really like it. And it's also fun to entertain people. You know, that's a two way street. I love making people laugh and making people think, and, you know, and helping people's companies succeed. So, you know, all of that is good, but I don't do it anonymously. I like to get the credit for it.
That's great. Well, I appreciate about that a lot too, because, you know, when you mention things like the fear that you won't be able to accomplish something, even though you have the skills and the experience and the proof throughout the years, I think that's something that every professional finds buried in their work.
Yeah. I don't think I had really ever identified it, but I did a Creative Mornings talk a few months ago about the topic of procrastination, of which I knew nothing except for, you know, I was a enthusiastic practicer of it. And, you know, during that exercise, I did some very purposeful introspection about, you know, why am I not wanting to write this thing? And it was fundamentally a fear that, like, maybe I won't do it. I won't do it well.
That's good. And I love that drive to overcome that fear to then produce the work.
I also have to say that I recognize that it's an irrational, it's a nuisance is what it really is. It's not, I'm not having panic attacks and wringing my hands and bursting into tears. And, you know, it's not a legitimate fear. It is a sort of annoying, not very helpful nuisance.
I'm curious, when you set out to be a writer, did you think about it as I'm going to be a writer, or is it I'm going to be writing? Like, did you look at it from that identity piece of writer?
Well, when I think of a writer, I actually think of a, you know, Neil Gaiman or, you know, an author, which I will never be. You know, I am a word slinger, you know, for capitalism, I guess, but I don't put myself in that same group. And when I set out to do it, it was not that conscious. It was not like, you know, on my 18th birthday, I thought I'm going to be a writer when I grow up. You know, I had other plans, and it was a series of bizarre events that sort of landed me here, but I never wanted to leave once I started.
Mm-hmm. There's the name of your memoir right there, A Series of Bizarre Events.
Well, yeah, that might sound a little too close to the Lemony Snicket series. And if you haven't read those, they are in theory for children, but lordy, are they wonderful, delightful, dark, excellent books. That's a series of unfortunate events.
I think everyone should read every book, seriously. Like, books for kids, adults should read, young adult novels, adults should read. Read it all.
Yeah, which could be problematic when you're raising a child and you follow that philosophy. You should be able to read anything, and your child wants to know about 50 Shades of Grey, and she's a pretty young adolescent. And anyway, that's another story for another day.
Well, then you can teach about the value of aesthetics and quality of writing at that point.
Yeah. And actually, I have to say, like, not to go too far down that, but she did recognize that it was terrible writing. So,
well, that speaks more to your parenting than, and your value as a professional. So there you go.
Anyway, where were we? We were talking about careers, I think.
Becoming
a writer, yeah.
Becoming a writer, yeah. See, what I love about this conversation already, Sarah, is like, just like good writing, there's those rabbit trails you go down to see if there's something there. And already there's so much delightful gold that we've experienced, or at least that I've experienced. I can't speak for you.
Well, yay. I'm nothing if not wandering around. So
that's all right. It's wonderful. So one of the things that I'm curious about is the origin story of your business name, Shiny Red Copy, because the first thing I think of is the red ink on the paper correcting all of my mistakes.
Oh, how interesting. I've never heard that one. So it came about because I was going to begin freelancing 1999, I think it was. And I started to think of company names, and everything had been taken. Everything. Mm-hmm. There was not a URL on the planet remaining. And so it sort of forced me to get a little more unusual. And when I hit this name, Shiny Red Copy, I loved it instantly because I think it kind of points to the unabashed hawking of merchandise, you know, aspect of my job, you know, which, you know, I am selling stuff, right? I'm pumping, you know, up positives and playing down negatives and, you know, the biz, as they say, you know, the ad biz. So I can embrace that. It's a reason, another side note, I don't do PR. I'm not comfortable doing press releases because I think that's kind of pretending to be editorial sometimes. Mm-hmm. I like advertising because it is what it is. It's like, we are now going to try to convince you to part with your money because, you know, and here, you know, here is our selling proposition. So it's a bit of a game to me that I like. But that shiny red to me, so it kind of pointed to that whole phenomenon of just the ad biz. But what I particularly like about it is what you just did, what you see in your head is different from what my uncle saw when he saw a shiny red wagon, you know, or, you know, it might be a shiny red Corvette or just whatever glitzy. It's probably not something found in nature, but it could be a red fruit, I guess, a red apple. So that's what I really like about it is people can perceive it the way they want to. And coincidentally and totally just, and I don't think this is a positive or negative, it just is, but SR are my initials and, you know, shiny red. So that was just a coincidence though.
And yet you can turn it around and be like, I planned that entirely.
I didn't. Awesome. I really didn't.
That's so fascinating. And I love that you found the connection to like the memories that people have that they bring to things. Cause if, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's really the hallmark of top-notch copywriting that, that really sells products.
Right. And I guess I there was one more thing I'd mention about the name that I really like is it's mildly surreal because copy, it doesn't have a three dimensionality to it typically. Right. So I just like that touch of surreality to it.
I didn't think of copy as a surreal quality. That's fascinating. But now I'm kind of like marveling at that, trying to like, in my mind, give shape to what copy could look like.
Right. Right. It's, it's ethereal. I don't know. You're sort of fabricating something in people's imaginations rather than building a house, or it's all between people's ears is where copy lives.
So have you been freelancing since 1999?
So I began freelancing then, but I had a long stretch in between. So let's see, I did that for probably, I don't know, a couple of years. I guess I did it until 2003. When I was hired by Publix Supermarkets to go full-time there. And although that was my priority, that full-time job for, heck, how many years? 13 it was. Wow. I would occasionally take freelance projects that I did, you know, on weekends and evenings. So it never went away. I've had the website, you know, since since way back when. So and then in 2016, I left Publix and started freelancing again. And now it's the only thing I want to do. I love it.
Did you have a hero that really kicked off this copywriting journey?
I'd have to say my first boss, Stan Bornstein, who, again, it's a bit of a story, but I got a job in the agency he ran with his two partners. But I got that job because I had graduated college. I did not have employment. I did have rent. And so I hung up posters all over Boston's Back Bay that basically said I would do anything for money in a slightly less, you know, suggestive way, I guess. Right. But, you know, yeah, I had to tear off phone numbers and ended up doing all sorts of odd jobs, but that agency, Stan, was the one who contacted me for a gig, you know. Anyway, one thing led to another. I got an internship there a couple days a week. And anyway, I got to see him literally, you know, producing copy every day because he was in the office right next to me typing on a typewriter when I first started. That's how it happened. When I started to get interested in I wanted to join the ad club and, you know, I thought advertising might be the thing I wanted to do. Stan was very kind and he said, well, why don't you, instead of paying to take an ad club class, why don't you, you know, why don't I give you some assignments and I'll critique you. And, so he was very generous and was truly a mentor. So he's the one I'd have to point to. There are many other copywriters I could name whom I admire a lot. Some you would have heard of, some you wouldn't have, but anyway, but he has probably had the most impact on me.
One of the things that I'm taking away from our conversation so far, Sarah, is you have a knack at doing things in intriguing ways. So whether it's, you know, the way you named your company, or, you know, the way that you start generating business, or just the way that you approach your craft, I mean, you're really coming at it differently than I think a lot of people do.
Oh, well, thanks.
And I think there's something to be learned, and I think applied to our own businesses, of just, like, you know, search for that uniqueness and take those risks.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say too, advertising values creativity and doing things in a different and fun way. Mm-hmm. I think probably if you were, I don't know, an attorney for Fortune 100 companies, you know, you might not make a resume that goes horizontally with, you know, that says resume schmesume like mine does, you know. So, you know, I get to be as fun as I want to be, which is why I am, you know, so happy in what I do for work. I think probably other verticals could learn from advertising, though. It's fun is, we all need it, man.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So why not hang up a sign? You know, like, why not do it a little different?
And I think, if there's any question that can trigger like a massive creativity storm, it's that question, why not?
Right. What harm could it do?
Mm-hmm. Which is another good question too.
Right. Yeah, that is a good one. Right. You might scandalize someone, but maybe they need to be a little scandalized, get their heart racing a little faster, right?
Exactly. One of the things that stood out to me as I was learning more about you, Sarah, is your book, Unflubify Your Writing, Bite-Sized Lessons to Improve Your Spelling, Punctuation, and Grammar. And that's got to be the best book title because of the word unflubify.
Oh, thank you. That makes me really happy. That was another one where oh my gosh, it took me so long to come up with that. I underestimated how difficult it would be. Again, every single title has been taken.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some very good ones. But shoot, I wanted to get that done, and it took me quite a while. Mm-hmm. But when I hit it, I loved it.
Yeah. So what does it mean to unflubify our writing?
So English is full of traps that we all fall into. You know, there are words that sound identical, that mm-hmm. Are spelled differently. There are words that look the same, that are pronounced differently. There are expressions that we all say so quickly that you would never know how to write them down because you've only heard them. I pity everyone who has to learn it as a second language because it's so bizarre and inconsistent, and, you know, words that end with GH that you don't pronounce, and you know, they all have different, you know, through sounds different than bow, and, you know, B-O-U-G-H, which, you know, sounds like B-O-W, which can also be pronounced bow, and bow could also be spelled B-E-A. You, if I'm spelling that right, which is French, and you know, it's just insane. So it is awfully easy to make mistakes. So when I started freelancing again in 2016, I knew I wanted to play on LinkedIn because I knew that the people who need copywriters are going to be there. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what can I do that other people would find helpful? And I thought, well, maybe I'll kind of explain, you know, there are so many mistakes that people make. They make these flubs, getting back to your question, which is, you know, where did this come from? And, I've always felt like it doesn't mean people are stupid or uneducated or bad people. But if you don't know, how are you going to learn? Mm-hmm. So I started making these little lessons that would clarify, you know, maybe I'm trying to think, you know, let's with an apostrophe versus let's without, you know, right. an apostrophe. And I would explain it in, you know, kind of a fun and memorable way. And so that was a flub that I see people making, and I wanted to, you know, so anyway, that's essentially the problem that I address with that book are just these gaffes. You know, there are all these other words, you know, gaffes, boo-boos, goofs, you know, like right. we've all found, you know, we've all hit our foreheads, you know, and thought, oh, I can't believe I did that. And so, yeah, that's, it's trying to save us all from ourselves. <you Right.
know? laughs> Well, and it's funny too, because I know exactly what you're saying just in like writing some of my questions, like the word peak, for example. We have yeah. a sneak peek. We yep. have a sneak peek. And then we have like peak your curiosity. And it's just like, all
oh,
right.
It's terrible.
Did yeah. were you sneaking a peek? Were you looking at a mountain or were you getting curious? Like what were
right,
you doing?
Right. Right. And I do have a lesson in the book on that topic. And I yes. have a pretty good mnemonic. And there, you know, you asked earlier about what I'm enthusiastic or what I'm curious mm-hmm. about. That is a lesson I did where I use the letter forms to sort of burn a literal image, you know, mm-hmm. into people's minds. Not literally burn it, but a literal image. Yeah, peak. That's another good example. People hear it all the time. Mm-hmm. You piqued my curiosity. And it would make sense to spell that P-E-A-K because you think of, oh, you know, it's raising my curiosity to a peak. But right. but no, that's, again, we've kind of borrowed slash stolen that French word. And, you know, it has to do with pricking, you know. Mm. So anyway.
Okay, that's mind-blowing. That's cool.
Yeah.
When do you know to go from sharing things on LinkedIn to committing to writing a book? Because writing a book is commitment.
Yes, it is. It is not easy, is all I have to say. So as I created more and more of those lessons, some people started to say, you should make a word a day, you know, like a lesson a day calendar, you know, because all of my lessons happen to be square. So people were thinking of those, you know, square calendars. Mm-hmm. And I started to contemplate that, but then I thought what would really be helpful would be for there to be an index, because people, every day people say, have you ever addressed such and such a topic? And, you know, I would share on a ad hoc basis, but I thought if people could look up these lessons, that would be helpful. So that's kind of where the idea was born. And then it's a little bit of a long story. Someone offered to publish it. I thought, I think I want to do it this other way. And anyway, so I think this is how I spent the first year of the pandemic, basically, was working on the book.
That's cool. So as you're writing the book and going through the arduous process of, you know, shaping and refining these thoughts, how were you able to connect deeper with this love for words, but also not get overtaken by your love for the words?
Would you do me a favor and say that question again? I'm not sure I understand.
That's okay. I don't know if I fully understand the question, but I think it's this idea that when you're in love with the craft.
Yeah.
And you want to go deeper into it, because as you write a book, you know, it's not a blog post. It's not a LinkedIn post. There's a sense of depth to it. Mm-hmm. But how do you not get overtaken by, I mean, you could spend an entire lifetime researching right. this topic.
Yes. And so this is the beauty of the limitations of the format I've set up, because this began as a meme creation project, basically. Yeah. I relegated myself to these 1080 by 1080 pixel, you know, squares. Mm-hmm. And that was a beautiful limitation. I as a writer love space limitations. Nothing makes me happier. And genuinely, like it forces me to be creative. It forces me to get to the point. It forces me to jettison things that aren't adding. It makes me choose shorter words sometimes. So anyway, that's how this thing began, and it's how it's continued. And so I almost never stray from that approach. So these are all, you know, like under 200 words each, I think. They're really short. So in terms of getting overwhelmed, I really only had to kind of dive into one thing at a time. I didn't have to go way down some etymology hole. You know, I knew when to stop pretty well.
Nice.
I probably check, 10 sources for each topic or something. But anyway, it's pretty under control, I guess.
Yeah. It sounds like you have a really healthy relationship with limitations too.
Oh, I love them. And I have written about this before. It's probably why I couldn't write a novel. I think I would just disintegrate, you know, because the boundaries are not even there, really. You know, that's why some writers will restrict themselves. I'm going to write a book that doesn't include the letter E. I mean, this is a thing. People do this.
Wow.
Oh, sure. What is it? The Odyssey, you know, or there are certain restrictions and rules and things that people abide by. It really liberates you ultimately. It's kind of the irony of it. So I love writing for packaging, for example, because you only have a small amount of space and you certainly don't have a lot of attention. You know, the person you're talking to has better things to do than read the back of an ice cream package with the door of the freezer open at the store. You know what I mean? You've got to be quick and to the point. And I find that really fun.
Yeah.
So
as you're describing space limitations, I'm also thinking about other types of limitations. So things like time limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know for myself, since I work primarily in a digital medium, space isn't space is more expansive than physical space,
mm-hmm.
but then time becomes the factor. And,
yes.
And so, you know, what are some other limitations that you work in terms of writing?
Well, to the point you just made, when I have written for radio, for example, mm-hmm. you've got 15, 30 or 60 seconds, and you can speed up the VO's, speech using the technology or whatever. But anyway, I love you can't do a 61 second radio spot. It's right. out of the question. So that's another one. In terms of other limitations in my writing, there are times when you need to limit the vocabulary that you're using. You don't want to alienate your reader. So you may know the perfect word, but you might want to choose not to use it, because mm-hmm. I swing both ways on that when I'm writing for myself. I'll sometimes make people, you know what, these days to look up a word, all you have to do is hold down one button and right. and then hold down the mouse, and then you not only learn the meaning of the word, but 10 synonyms, mm-hmm. the antonyms, the etymology. So I'll sometimes use a quote unquote hard word, because I think it will enrich readers' lives if they just mm-hmm. take that one little step. But there are times though when I try to keep things, not too time consuming to get through.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't much of an ebook reader until the pandemic, because I couldn't go to the library anymore for the longest time. So
yes.
I resorted to checking out books online. And I think that is my favorite feature of an ebook, is the ability to look up a word.
It's a miracle, isn't
it?
Yes. I have to say, it spoiled me. There may be a name for this phenomenon, But not only do I get frustrated when I'm reading a, you know, three-dimensional book and I can't just tap on a word to understand what it means, that's frustrating. But the other phenomenon that maybe this has happened to you, I want to use my two fingers to zoom on on things that are not electronic. And that's,
I'm right there with you. But then there's that moment where you're just like, this goes back to our earlier conversation about the design and the font of a book. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, there's just some physical books that are so much easier to read than an electronic book.
So true. Yeah. I think I do. I like the convenience of always having a book in my pocket on my phone, but the experience of reading on paper is physically more enjoyable to me than looking at something that glows, you know.
Yeah.
I can go both ways, but I still like books. And admit, books smell better.
Yes, 100%. Unless the phone has been, like, you know, dipped in like perfume or.
Yeah, right. I don't ever want to smell my phone.
Well, one of the burning questions that I have for you is why write a book about grammar when we can just let the phone, the computer, the AI, or the robot do the work for us?
So AI, there is a catastrophist in me that does believe that one day, you know, the singularity is going to happen and I will indeed completely be replaced. And, you know, robots are going to be not only smarter and more articulate than I am, but also, you know, funnier and whatever. We're not there yet, is my point. And so currently our phones will eagerly stab us in the back. They will absolutely, if you're trying to write, you know, as is my want, W-O-N-T, your phone would love to put an apostrophe in that word. And then you will look, whatever. So you still need to be smarter than your phone or your computer or anything. Uh-huh. But also, I maintain that the more you know about writing, the more you can enjoy it. And it can go from sort of a minefield where you feel insecure and stupid. And I put that in quotes, people aren't stupid, but they might feel that way if they're insecure, to getting more confident and playful, you know, again, with the playfulness, like, you know, playing racquetball, it can be a very joyful experience to play with words and to even play with grammar. Boy, do I get a kick out of making up words, marrying two words, turning nouns into verbs and vice versa in playful ways, misspelling things on purpose. If you, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can really improvise. So yeah, it's, I guess the positives are twofold, that you aren't beating yourself up all the time and you can have fun.
Right.
So yeah, I think the more you know, the more you can do.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like too, it's a form of the know the rules to break the rules.
Sure. And also one other thing that is so fun, you know, you hear all the time about how it's all about story. Everything is about story, whether you're, you know, doing an advertisement or making a podcast or, you know, just the power of story. Well, it so happens that every single word we use literally has a story. Literally, like there is an etymology website that I go to all the time, and the URL is something like etymonline.com, free. And you can't believe the backstory to words. You know, they have violent, mystical things that people used to do 400 years ago. You can't even believe if you find out. It's just fascinating. They come from different countries. They come from wars where one, you know, country dominated another one. So I'm just saying that, like, I encourage everyone to check out etymology because it is absolutely flippin' delightful.
I love that there's a story to every word because it made me think of there's a story behind every font face, every typographical system.
Yes, that is so true. And I have to say, most people take typefaces for granted. They do not think about them. The more you know, the more blown away you will be. You know, there was a time I did not know what a two-story A or a two-story G or what a serif was or a bowl or they're just, you can't believe the craft that goes into every page of every book. It is nothing on the page was an accident. It has been extremely deliberate and thoughtful, and you should thank the type designers that who have made it so readable. Honestly, if you've ever seen a book where at the back they'll say this was set in Castlin, you know, 12 point or whatever it is. There was a time when I kind of rolled my eyes at that and thought, well, that's silly. Who cares?
Right.
Well, you should care because it makes it easy on your eyes. And then also just to go down this road a little bit, if you look at the history of those typefaces, you will often be astonished by how old they are. Anyway, you will sometimes associate a typeface like, I'm trying to think. Anyway, some of them seem like they were born. Cooper Black is one. I see Cooper Black and I think, oh, this is the 70s. You know, that's all I can think. Much older than that. 1922, it was created. So if anyone wants to look up Cooper Black, you may not even know what it is. It's sort of a fat typeface that I really associate for some reason with kind of like bell bottoms and stuff. Maybe I'm even wrong about that, but it's 100 years old.
Okay. Math. There's a story in math too. Wow. 2021. Oh, time.
Yes.
Well, speaking of time, as we wrap up our time together,
nice segue.
What's one thing you want listeners to take away from this conversation today? Because honestly, now I know the difference between take away one word and take away two words.
Yes.
Noun and verb.
That's right. I have a lesson about a lot of those two word, one word things like make up. And anyway, so one thing to take away, I think I've said it recently, just that you really can have fun writing and reading. And I just encourage everyone to look more closely and learn as much as possible because it's a way of connecting with other people, of expressing yourself, of, you know, discovering new things. It's just this whole world that it's very easy to take for granted. And I would just encourage people not to and to appreciate it for its depth.
Amazing. Well, final question for you, Sarah, and knowing how much you love books and how much you love podcasts too, this might be the longest question that we have to talk about, but what book or podcast is currently blowing your mind right now?
Blowing my mind. Well, I'm trying to think of anything that's really blown my mind recently. I will say that I have been listening obsessively to the following podcast, which is, it's called True Crime Obsessed.
You sound embarrassed.
I will just quickly say, I really don't watch television. The two hosts of this podcast watch the TV for me, basically. They watch these series, and then they sort of interpret them and analyze them in a very, very funny, entertaining, story-centric way that just engages me to the nth degree. And so I guess blowing my mind, you know, the amount of time I've spent listening to this over the past 3 weeks is just astonishing. So, and yeah, I'm a Patreon. Like I can't.
That's awesome.
So that's, I guess, blowing my mind.
It's funny because there's a show on Hulu with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez, and they're all into the same true crime podcast.
There you go.
And so there's like a murder in their building and they're going to like research it. And the cops are like, are you listening to a podcast again? They're like, yeah. And they're just like, go away. That's great. Well, Sarah, it has been so much fun to talk with you today. I have learned so much about grammar and storytelling and copywriting. It's truly been a delight.
Thank you so much. I had a lot of fun. It was nice talking to you too.
As a huge fan of books about writing, I encourage you to pick up Sarah's book, Unflubify Your Writing. Additionally, I would also suggest using a tool such as Grammarly. I know for myself, I have found it to be an incredibly powerful part of my writing process, especially in the refining and editing phases. And what is curious for me is the more I use the tool, the more I actually get curious about wanting to understand why I was getting that suggestion and why certain grammar and spelling combinations actually make sense. I hope that you will explore all of the ways that you can to have more fun with your writing and to really help you be a better writer, especially in an age where writing is kind of boring. So have some fun with it. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.